And now you're going on an incredible spiritual journey with Nick Bunick. We'll be back with him in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Many of you may know the name Nick Bunick, a man of incredible spiritual abilities. He started his journey years ago when a friend of his persuaded him to visit a psychic. His journey has taken him to being the subject matter of a best-selling book, The Messengers, and that was about the angelic experiences. His latest, Time for Truth. Hundreds have claimed to see angels, by the way, standing behind him when he speaks to live audiences around the country with messages that have impacted the lives of many people. Here's Nick on Coast to Coast AM. Nick, welcome to the program. How are you?
I'm fine, George. I appreciate you having me. I'm looking forward to tonight.
Me too. Me too. And The Messengers, indeed a great story and great book. And Time for Truth, I believe you're on your way with another one. What is it about this message, Nick, that so many people need and look forward to?
Well, there's many messages to share with you, but I first have to tell you that I didn't start off in the spiritual journey with my background. I came from a place outside of Boston that you probably heard of, Chelsea, Massachusetts.
Sure thing. Absolutely.
And Chelsea was one of the poorest cities in the country when I was growing up in it. My mother, father never owned a house, never had a car, never had a savings account. But I was very fortunate when I graduated from high school. I accepted a football scholarship to the University of Florida. And then I found myself years later living what some people would consider the American dream. At that time, I had owned three companies. I lived in a very nice house and had a wonderful family. And a friend of mine, a very conservative Catholic by the name of George Mack, persuaded me to go to a psychic one day. And I was very reluctant to do that, George, because I had a vision of a psychic as a person with a turban on their head with a crystal ball in front of them.
Exactly.
But what I found out was that there are some people, although there are some psychics that perhaps really aren't, there are some people that truly have that gift, the gift that they can tell you what's going to happen in your life. So I reluctantly made my phone call and made an appointment with the man's wife, whose name was Joanne Berry, was the name of the psychic. And she never asked me my name. She told me when we would meet to go to her home. And I did go. And when I went into her home, she told me that her husband, Joanne Berry, was waiting in the kitchen for me. When I walked into his kitchen, George, the man was in a total trance. Incense was burning. Spiritual music was in the background. His eyes were totally closed. He didn't know if I was 50 years old or 5 years old. But he knew everything that was happening in my life. And there came a time during the reading when he told me, he said, Nick, there's going to come a time in your life that you're going to be speaking in front of thousands of people in live audiences and millions of people on television and radio. And I thought perhaps I had been elected to an important political office and became ambassador of the United Nations.
Yeah, really.
But what he told me, George, was the beginning of changing my life, because he said to me, no, he said, it has to do with the time 2,000 years ago when you walked with the Master. Now, I had no idea what he was talking about 2,000 years ago when I walked with the Master. I mean, I hadn't even read the Gospels in my life. And he didn't say another word about that. He went into other subjects. But that started me on a journey that was remarkable, because what I found out over the next few years after that is a confirmation after confirmation that indeed my spirit and soul had manifested itself, had expressed itself and a person 2,000 years ago that is well-known in the Bible. And I didn't know how to deal with it. I didn't want to deal with it. I thought, what do you do with information like that? Many hours I laid in bed at night saying, God, what am I supposed to do with this? And then one day I went to a local psychic in my city who is world-renowned. Her name is Laurie McCrory, and she actually goes to other countries finding missing people. And I didn't know Laurie, but they told me that she was a person that was all business. When you walked into her office, you sat down on the couch, and she slapped down a tape on a recorder, and half an hour later, the tape popped up, and she handed it to you, and you were out the door.
And without probably knowing what happened in between until you went home, right?
That's right. Well, what happened was, the first thing Laurie said to me was, Nick, is your right knee still bothering you? And I said, oh, here we go. Because my right knee was bothering me. I was running about 6 or 7 miles a day up and down hills at that time. And she told me that I was going with a woman who happens to be my wife today, But at that time, I was going with a woman. She said her mother and father resented the relationship because I wasn't Catholic, but that both her mother and father would be in the hospital next year, and one of them would pass away. And sure enough, a year later, her mother and father were in the hospital, father with cancer, the mother with a heart attack, and the mother did pass away. But in the middle of this reading, she stood up, her eyes got as big as you can imagine. She said, Nick, oh my God, you knew Jesus. You knew Jesus.
That's amazing.
And I just looked at her, and I didn't say anything because I'd already been living with this for quite a few years.
You already knew this, right?
I knew it, but I wasn't expecting that from her. So I just listened to what she had to say. When she realized I wasn't going to respond, she went on to other things. And when the tape popped up, she said, you and I have to go to lunch tomorrow. I've got to talk to you. We went to lunch the next day, and she said, Nick, what are you going to do? You've got to move on with your life, your mission in your life. I said, Lori, what am I supposed to do? Put an ad in the paper and say, hey, I want you to know I lived 2,000 years ago and walked with Jesus?
Yeah.
Or do I call a talk show like yours and say, hey, I want you to... I mean, I said, what do I do, Lori?
But we got you on.
That's right. Well, there's no coincidences in the world, is there, Judge?
Yeah, that's right.
You know, I found out that an idea of God's cannot be defeated. Well, Lori said that she knew of a woman by the name of Julia Ingram, who was a hypnotherapist who specialized in past life regression. And she asked me would I be willing to meet with Julia to see whether or not we'd be willing to pursue the possibility of my being hypnotized and age regressed.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Well, I met with Julia a week later, the three of us did, and we agreed to do that, George. But I had never read the New Testament, and we both agreed, and Julia wasn't familiar with it either. I mean, Julia was a very professional woman. She wasn't she was more like a professor in a college, a very, very sophisticated woman, mm-hmm. not a New Age person. And she said, Nick, I'm not going to write down any questions in advance. Let's just play it by ear and see what happens. Well, we spent the next 6 months capturing on tape 26 hours of a lifetime of 2,000 years ago through my soul memory.
That's immense.
Yes, it began with my running through, with Paul, the Apostle Paul, running through his father's fields in the region of Cilicia, outside of the outskirts of Tarsus, chasing sheep. And then when Paul was 18 years old, he finished his education, he moved to the Holy Land. And he changed, at that time he changed his name. His real name was Paulus, by the way, not Paul.
Right.
It would have been spelled P-A-L-U-S in English. And he changed his name to Saul when he got to the Holy Land because he wanted people to think of him as a Hebrew rather than a Roman citizen because his father had, there were three ways one could become a Roman citizen in those days. One was to purchase it. And his father had purchased Roman citizenship for his family. But when he was 21 years old, he met Jesus, who was 23 years old. And what I found out during my 26 hours of hypnosis, many, many things that are missing in the New Testament about the life of Paul and the life of Jesus that theologians contacted me after the first book was written, George, wanted me to get more information. But I also found out in many places which are conflicted with the New Testament. And I was puzzled why this was. Because when I began to do talk shows back then, I would find out people saying, well, wait a minute, that's not what it says in the New Testament. So I spent years of research to find out why there was such a discrepancy. Now, some of the things that were different were not really important things that there were many important things that I want to share with your listeners tonight and you, George, that literally changed the teachings of Jesus and Paul dramatically. But some of the simple things, like, for example, Joshua, by the way, his name wasn't Jesus 2,000 years ago, it was Joshua. And in the 4th century, they changed his name to Jesus, which is the Latin translation of the name Joshua. Well, he didn't grow up in Nazareth. Mary and Joseph were from Nazareth. They actually grew up in Capernaum. And Capernaum is on the western shore of the Sea of Galilee, which is really a lake, not a sea. It was called at that time Lake Tiberias after the Emperor Tiberius.
Right.
And that's where Jesus grew up. He grew up in Capernaum, and that's why his first 9 disciples that he accumulated, that he gathered together, were fishermen. That were fishermen along the Sea of Galilee.
Now, when you were you there as a spectator, or were you an apostle?
You mean on hypnosis?
Yeah. Do they know? Okay. Do they know what your role was back 2,000 years ago?
Did I know what my role was?
Yeah.
Before I became an apostle, before Paul became an apostle, I didn't know he was becoming an apostle. An apostle comes from the ancient word apostolos, which means a teacher. And then you didn't actually have apostles until after Jeshua had died. That's when people became apostles. Before that, they were disciples.
Disciples or followers, right?
Right. Well, the word disciples comes from the ancient word discipulus, which means pupils. So Paul's relationship with Jeshua was a one-on-one relationship, because at that time only about 10% of the people were capable of reading and writing. 90% of the people were illiterate, and Paul was very educated. So his relationship with Jeshua was quite different than those of the other disciples at that time, and that's why he's not mentioned in the Gospels, because he wasn't one of them. But at any rate, there were many things that I found out which are not in the Gospels. For example, people didn't have last names back in those days. They would call them Jacob, the son of Abraham, or Jacob, the son of Isaac, because they could identify them by their father in terms of which Jacob they were talking about, because they didn't have last names. Now, the reason Mary Magdalene is called Magdalene is not because it's her last name. That's because she was Magdala.
Okay, Magdala Nick, let me ask you this, though, because I don't want to get into the biblical history here.
Okay.
I'm more interested in what's been going on with you and why people are seeing angels behind you. And has this been happening to you since you went to the psychic and you've gone through the regression?
Well, it happened to me when, after my first book that you mentioned, the messengers, which I was a subject matter of, went into print, and I began the tour around the country. And I'm not clairvoyant. I cannot see into the spiritual world. But every place I went to, every city, whether it was New York or Washington, D.C. or Los Angeles or Chicago, every city I went to, there was always people afterwards that would, when I was signing books for people, that there were people that weren't sitting together, they would say to me that they saw me standing behind me, an angel that was 7 feet tall and lavender in color, lavender, that was dressed in lavender. It was always consistent, always consistent. For example, there was one time I was in Naples, Florida, and my very dear friend Ruth Montgomery, which I'm sure you're familiar with Ruth's work. She was wonderful, wonderful. Authoress who's passed on since now. I don't believe in death. Her spirit and soul has made a transition. And I was speaking at the Unity Church in Naples, and I got a letter about a week later from a gentleman. I could tell he was quite elderly because his handwriting was shaking, and he told me he was quite elderly. And he told me that when he walked into the sanctuary of the chapel, he said the energy was so tremendous the claws were sticking to his body. But he said, while you were talking, he said, I saw something that absolutely amazed me. And he took off his glasses, he said, and he wiped them and put it back on. And he proceeded in his letter describing exactly the same 7-foot angel in lavender.
Jeez. Now, how many people would see that at the same time?
Generally, it would average about 8 people scattered around the audience.
That's a lot.
And as I say, I'm not clairvoyant, George, so I've never seen an angel myself personally.
What was so special about them, Nick, that allowed them to see this?
I think they must have had some clairvoyance in them. There are some people that have that ability of clairvoyance, although not many. And, the audience might have like 14, maybe 1,000 people or 1,500 people in it. And we're talking about maybe just 4% of the people would be able to see the vision of the angel standing behind me. I could feel the presence, but I couldn't see the angels because I'm not clairvoyant.
When you wrote, because your work here, Time for Truth, when you write about reincarnation, for example, you mentioned something when you were a little child. Elaborate again on it.
Well, when I was about 11 years old, I had a dream, and the entire dream was in French. And I don't speak French, and nobody in my family spoke French. And in the dream, I was a young man in my 20s. I graduated from the Sorbonne University in Paris, which would be the equivalent to like Harvard University here in the United States. And I was drafted into the army. I saw myself in the dream on a troop train with military uniforms, all soldiers, and I had a rifle with me. And the floors were made out of wood. There was no carpeting or anything of that nature. And the next scene, I was standing up, I was shooting up against a well in the middle of the street, and I was shooting at a The person who I saw in my dream was shooting at a window three stories up in a four-story building. And then the person, I got shot in the chest. And when I did, my spirit immediately left my body, immediately. And I was now hovering about 10 feet above it, looking at the scene above. Well, what happened years later, a friend of mine by the name of Sherry Dugas, and Tom Dugas, her husband, was a former football player. But anyway, they were living in Sun Valley, and she called me on the phone one day and said, Nick, a psychic went through Sun Valley that she visited with the night before. And she said, I always felt that I knew you in a past life. He told me that you and I knew each other in Paris in the early 1900s, and you had died as a soldier in Belgium in the First World War. What happened after that, my parents came out to visit me from Chelsea, and I was living on the West Coast, and I was walking with my mother along the beach, and I said to Mom, did I ever say anything about France when I was a child? And she laughed. She says, Nick, when you were a child, you used to beg me, say, please don't tell people you're from Russia. Please tell them you're from Paris, France. And you used to collect every picture you could find of old scenes from Paris along the Champs-Élysées and the Arc de Triomphe and the Seine River. Well, I decided to be hypnotized and go back to that past life, and I experienced exactly the same scenes that I did in my dream. The troop train, as well as the being shot, being killed up against the well. Then years later, my wife and I went to Paris, and I felt like I knew the city. I could walk around like it was familiar to me. And we went to a church one day after we crossed the bridge of the Seine, and there was a church after you go through a park. It was an old church, and there were only about three people in the church, and I had an incredible deja vu experience. My wife and I were standing in the aisle, and all of a sudden, I literally could see the church was filled with people. They were singing hymns in quiet voices, French. And I could even smell the people. I was so real. And tears started coming down my eyes. And my wife said, what's the matter? I said, don't say anything. And it lasted about 30 seconds. So I had those five incidents collectively, which convinced me that indeed my spirit and soul had lived in the early 1900s and manifested itself in a person who had died in the First World War in Belgium.
When we come back in a moment, I want to talk about Edgar Cayce and some of those incredible stories that you've got with him. Nick, do you think, as you look at the way this planet is going right now, are we going to make it? Do you think we're going to pull out of this?
Yes, I do think so. I truly do. But there's a lot of challenges that we have to meet and a lot of changes that have to be made.
Yeah, but it's such a hateful planet, isn't it?
Well, what's happened, unfortunately, the messages of Jesus and Paul 2,000 years ago have been distorted. Messages of love would change the messages of fear. Messages of compassion would change the messages of guilt. And messages that were supposed to bring us together as brothers and sisters instead were used to polarize us. And as a result of that, you have your two major religions in the world who are both saying that if you don't believe in what we believe in, God's going to punish you and you're going to go to hell. And that's got to change. That has to dramatically change. And that's one of the things that I've committed myself in my mission in life to see that it does change.
And you're still speaking all around the country, aren't you?
I haven't, but I'm going. I haven't probably in 10 years, but I will be in conjunction with the new book coming out, which just came out 4 weeks ago. Come next year, I anticipate traveling all over the United States as well as other parts of the world and sharing the messages that I've been taught.
What took you so long to come back?
Well, what happened was that about 5 years ago, there were five different seers beginning about 5 years ago that told me I was going to go on a mission around the world with messages that would impact the lives of millions of people. The first one was a man named John Lawrence, a beautiful human being. He wrote me a letter when the messages came out, and he sent me a copy of his book.
Hold on for 1 second.
Surely.
Let's take this break, and we'll come right back with you on Coast to Coast AM. We'll be right back. And with our special guest tonight, Nick Bunick, as we talk about his work, Time for Truth, the spiritual journey he is undertaking. And we'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Nick, you were talking about five seers that were telling you to go on this mission. How did they do it?
Well, they told me, well, these are seers I knew personally that are scattered around the world. One of them is one of the holiest men in India. But they told me that I would be going on this mission. And I had no idea how this was going to happen. Several years went by, and I thought, well, maybe someday I'll be watching a football game, like watching the Oregon play USC, and some UFO will come down and beam me up, right?
Yeah.
In front of 50,000 people and beam me back a year later and say, okay, what did you learn? So after several years went by, George, I just assumed that God had changed his mind because I couldn't see what the catalyst was going to be. And one of the things that happened to me over a number of years is the numbers 444 have played an incredible part of my life. 444 is your angels and spirit guides' way of letting you know that they're in your life, that they're a part of your life. And this isn't me, everybody. Every person has spirit guides and angels that are part of their lives. In fact, I received over 10,000 letters when our first book came out, the first 6 months, and half the people had 444 experiences. So what happened to me is that one night, when my family was away out of town, I was by myself. I woke up in the middle of the night, I looked at the clock, it was 4:44, which wasn't unusual. I smiled and went back to sleep. The next night, the lamp went on next to my bed, all by itself in the middle of the night. And I thought, what is going on? And I sat up and I looked at the clock, and it was 4:44. And I shut the lamp off and I got down on my knees and said, okay, share with me, what are you trying to tell me, what you want me to do? And they said to me, they wanted me to write a letter to Louise Hay, the president of Hay House Publishing Company, and tell her that I have a book inside of me that they have to publish. Now, George, I didn't have any relationship with Hay House. As far as I knew, they didn't even know my name or who I was. And I thought, this is crazy. They're going to think this is insane when I sent a letter. But I did send it. And about 4 days later, I got a call from the president of the company. He said to me, Nick, go ahead and write your first chapter. I want to see what you have. Well, I didn't know I had a first chapter in me, George, but I started writing. And I couldn't stop. I wrote three chapters. The energy, the spiritual energy around me was so tremendous, I couldn't stop writing. And I sent him the three chapters, and he called me back a few days later and said, Nick, you got a bestseller, the contract's on the way.
Just like that.
Yeah.
Amazing.
And I know, I mean, because that is how books get published, as you know. And I wrote Time for Truth in probably about 5 weeks. I was writing a chapter a day, and it was an incredible experience because there's so much information in the book that came from Spirit. Channelings that I'm not capable of writing because I don't get words that are beyond my capability of putting into words. I would find scattered around me. I would find in my drawers or in filing cabinets words written in my handwriting that I had no recollection of having written that I know came from Spirit. Like the rain cannot distinguish need; it falls in the ocean as well as in the valley.
It would just flow right through to you.
Yes, be love and gentleness and all around you should create the same. But some of it went off of pages and pages, which I've incorporated in some of the chapters in my book, Time for Truth. So anyway, that's how it happened.
What is it about the messages, Nick, that's so important that they want us to know about them?
Well, first of all, it's so important that people realize that every one of us has the Spirit of God inside of us. We are part of God, and God is part of us. That's why we are eternal and immortal. We're not human beings who, by coincidence, have a spirit and soul. We are spirits with a soul that are having a human experience. And I ask people to visualize inside of them as if they had a pyramid with 1,000 steps inside of them. At the top of the pyramid is God in Christ consciousness. And every one of us is on a different step, George. Every one of us is on a different step. And our purpose of our life is to climb those stairs one at a time until eventually we reach the top and become one with God. And the way you climb those stairs is by embracing God's will, is by living your life with acts of compassion, universal love.
And you know what? I was talking to people Friday night about that on the program, and we're all convinced, Nick, that if you give from the heart, not because you want thanks or recognition or anything like that, but if you give from the heart, it comes back 10 times.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It's truly amazing.
Yeah. But every one of us is on a different step, but you cannot climb the top 1,000 steps in one lifetime, George. That's where reincarnation is so important, because everything I'm sharing with you, I'm not unique to. Every one of your listeners have exactly the same ability to experience what I've experienced. And what people don't realize is that 2,000 years ago, the Judaic religion believed in reincarnation, as did Jesus also. They believed in reincarnation. That was their belief system. And in 553 A.D., at the Fifth Ecumenical Council, the Church passed a resolution saying that from this day on, if anybody continued to preach reincarnation, they would be excommunicated from the Church and there'd be a curse on them. And that ended the reincarnation teaching within the Christian religion. But very few people realize. In fact, what happened in the 4th century, when the Gospels were rewritten from ancient Latin into contemporary Latin, the Vulgate Latin, they tried to purge everything dealing with reincarnation out of the Gospels, but they missed in two places. In the Gospel of Matthew, in chapter 16, verse 13, Jesus asked his disciples, he said, what are people saying that I was in a past life? And they're saying, some say that you were here, the prophet Elijah. And Joshua says, no, he who's the prophet of Elijah has already come. They took his life just as someday they'll take mine also. And the next paragraph says, and the disciples knew that he was talking about John the Baptist, was a reincarnation of the prophet Elijah. So the reason this is so important is because in order to climb that pyramid of 1,000 steps, it may take many lifetimes, but it doesn't make a difference. That is the purpose in our life, is to become at one with God, become at one with that part of God that's inside of us.
Tell me about this Edgar Cayce story.
Well, what happened was that 2,000 years ago, Paul appointed a friend of his by the name of Lucius to become the head of the church in Laodicea. And Lucius was married to a Jewish woman by the name of Maria, but he had a relationship with a Roman woman by the name of Vesta and had a child by her. And Paul was so upset that he went ahead and replaced Lucius' position and said, from this day on, if anybody is married and is a member, is a lead administrator of my church, they have to have fidelity towards their marriage. Well, what happened was that not too long after my book came out, I got an invitation to come out to Virginia Beach to the Edgar Cayce Foundation campus.
Sure.
In fact, I enjoyed a wonderful breakfast I had in the home of Hugh Cayce, who's the grandson, as you know, George, of Edgar Cayce. But the reason they invited me out, it turned out that in one of the readings that Cayce gave, which apparently was never published, to my knowledge, Cayce said that 2,000 years ago, he was Lucius and told exactly the same story about being married to Maria and having a relationship with Vesta, the Roman woman, and having a child by her and Paul replacing him. And they were excited about this because this is the only two places in the world that's confirming the story that I'm sharing with you, because it's not in the Gospels, is the experience that I had in the soul memory of Paul and the hypnosis, and Edgar Cayce having given a reading saying he had been Lucius and telling exactly the same story.
That's a great story. You have a story, too, of an incident that happened in the Sierra Nevada mountains.
Yes.
Where angels saved your life. What happened?
Well, a friend of mine named Bob Stearns and I were driving across from I was living in California at the time. We were driving to the Sierra Nevada mountains. And we were driving on the road, and we came through, and it was winter time, but the roads were clear, and I was driving a Ford car. And we were approaching Donner Pass, and to our right was a huge drop, clear drop of thousands and thousands of feet below. And all of a sudden, we came to a point where the shadow of the mountain came across the road, and became which was sheer ice, and my car spun and did a 180-degree turn. Not 179 or 181, 180 degrees. George, I was going backwards, 50 miles an hour, alongside of a cliff of a drop of thousands of feet with no handrails.
It's goodbye, Nick.
You would think so, wouldn't you? But all of a sudden, something happened that I can't explain, and the car started spinning again, and it spinned exactly another 180 degrees, George. Exactly 180 degrees. So now I was traveling the direction I originally was started at.
Right.
And what are the odds that twice the car would spin exactly 180 degrees rather than going over the side of that cliff?
There's got to be some intervention somehow.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You will find when we take phone calls next hour, Nick, we're going to ask for some of these angelic experience stories. And they're unbelievable. I mean, I had one years ago of a truck driver who said that he had fallen asleep And he was going off the cliff. He was gone. And he woke up to a hand on his steering wheel, pulling him back on the road. And, of course, there was nobody else in the cab. He was all by himself.
And that's right.
And he's convinced that an angel did that. What are angels, according to you?
Well, an angel, unlike spirit guides, an angel is a species all of its own. It's never been a human. It's strictly a species. It's a messenger of God.
Part of the universe, right?
Yes, but a spirit guide, our spirit guides in our lives, and every one of us have angels and spirit guides in our life, and our spirit guides have lived as a human being, and they now are in the spirit world, and they're functioning as guides for us and helping us. When we feel fear, they try to give us courage. When we feel despair, they try to give us hope. They try to inspire us. But most people don't know that we have angels and spirit guides in their lives. And one of the things that I'm very committed to do is wanting to have people understand their relationship with God and that there are many angels and spirit guides that are assigned to you from the time you're born in order to help us through the journey of life.
Are there people out there who lack this knowledge, or should I say they don't want to accept this?
Well, unfortunately, there are many people that are taught as a very, very young child that we're over here on the left and God is over on the right, and the only way through God is through the church as a conduit, and they don't realize that every one of us have our own relationship with God and with angels and spirits that doesn't require a third party in order to intervene to give us that relationship.
Well, I agree. I remember when I was raised a Catholic, and my buddy was a Protestant, and, I'd go to confessional, right? You, a little Catholic boy, that's what you do.
Mm-hmm.
And, I asked him if he went because he needed to be saved, or if he died, he'd go to hell. And he went, no, we don't do that. We just confess our sins to ourselves, to God, and
right.
We're done. And I'm saying, how can this be? If I don't go, it's history time for me, I get fried. I mean, so I went through this metamorphosis myself. You have experienced some miraculous healing stories. You've witnessed them, haven't you?
Yeah.
Tell me one or two.
Well, a very, very dear friend of mine named Sarah O'Mara is a living saint. She's on step 999. She's a living saint. And God gave her the gift of being able to pray for people, and while she's praying for them, they're healed. I have been to her chapel. She has a non-denominational chapel that she built on the property, and her property. And I've seen people that were crippled in wheelchairs as she was praying for them get up and walk. I've seen people that were deaf, hundreds and hundreds of people that have been healed while God's praying for them. And she will tell you that it's not her that's healing them, it's God that's healing them. And there are people that will get up and give testimonials how 5 or 6 years ago they couldn't walk, they were crippled, and Sarah prayed for them. And God healed them, and they jump up on the stage and leap and dance, and it's an incredible experience watching God perform its miracles. And when people say that, oh, there's no such thing as God, I can share with you that I have a whole chapter in my book, In Time for Truth, about Sarah and the miracles that I've seen performed while she was praying for people. And it's an incredible experience to watch people healed by God as she is praying for them.
You know, Nick, have you done any work on exorcisms, or do you avoid that?
No, I avoid that. 2,000 years ago, it says in the gospel that Jesus was removing demons for people. But 500 years before that, the Greeks had a word called daemons, spelled D-A-M-O-N-S, which is where the word demons came from. And what daemons meant 500 years before Joshua was born, it was undesirable traits, people that had revenge or envy or hate or bigotry in their lives. And what Jesse would do when he prayed for people, he would have them remove those daemons from his life. Not demons, D-M-O-S. The church says it's demons. It was daemons. He would have people go through a series of forgiveness, which I have a chapter called Forgiveness in Time for Truth, explaining in detail the same process that I take people through, so that people remove those daemons, those undesirable traits in their life, and ask for forgiveness for anything they've done to hurt another person. But I personally don't believe in real demons.
No.
I know some people do, but I just don't. I've never experienced it.
How about people going through possession or changing?
Well, I think there's a lot of sick people in the world. I can remember watching on television one day a priest saying that he was in charge of exorcism in New York, and he proceeded in telling, it was on Fox, and he proceeded in telling them that he's probably performed about 500 exorcisms during the 10 years or whatever number of years he'd been functioning as the exorcist. And they said to him, well, how many people have you saved through exorcism? And he said, none. And they said, none? He said, no. He said, I haven't experienced ever been able to relieve a person from their demons. So I think there are people that are sick and people that have problems in their lives, but I don't believe in the devil and the word hell even. I don't know if people don't know this, but the word hell, 2,000 years ago, there was a dump outside of Jerusalem that burned 24 hours a day in the Valley of Hinnon. And the place was called... It was called hell. And the English translation of that word is hell. And that's where the church got the concept of hell.
You know, you might be right.
Well, what happened during the years?
I've long since questioned whether they have places like that. I mean, I believe in entities that are good or bad.
Yeah.
You know, I think if a person is bad, they're put at a different level or a different plane.
Exactly.
Something like that.
Yeah. You know, going back to the concept of the steps, of the thousand steps, every one of us is under a different step. When you were a child in the fifth grade and school was over in June, you basically took a rest and you came back the following fall. And you didn't come back as a junior in high school or a sophomore in college. You came back exactly where you left off the first day of school, in the first day of sixth grade. And the same is true in life. There's no such thing as death, but when our spirit and soul makes a transition from our bodies and comes back in the next lifetime, it comes back exactly where it leaves off, George. And the place where it goes into the spiritual world is also commensurate with how high they were up how evolved they were as a spirit, how high they had climbed up that pyramid before they had the transition of the soul from their body.
What do you think of the Book of Revelation, Nick?
Well, the Book of Revelation starts off by saying that there'll come a time. The Book of Revelation was written by a person who believed that everything he's talking about was going to happen during his lifetime, because he starts off by saying the time is almost near. There's one passage in there when he says that when the ships arrive in the city of the seven hills, which of course is Rome, with the seven hills where the beasts live, which is what he was referring to as the emperor, with their ships loaded with cargo of slaves and chariots, that the city will be burning. Well, are we still delivering slaves and chariots to Rome these days? And they also says in Revelation that the world will be eventually ruled by 144,000 people, which will be 12,000 people from each one of the 12 tribes of 12,000 Jewish people from each of the 12 tribes of Israel, and they'll have a mark on their forehead. Do you really believe that the Christian leaders in the world at the Vatican would be willing to accept the fact that 144,000 people of the Jewish faith are going to rule the world? Revelation was written by a Jewish man who was in a prison of Ptolemy on a Greek island, and he was talking about events that was going to happen in his life during his lifetime, not 2,000 years later.
During his lifetime?
During his lifetime.
You write in Time for Truth about forgiveness.
Yes.
I have a difficult time, you know, forgiving if somebody, let's say, hurt my family.
Yeah.
I don't think I could just forgive them. I I'm from the old eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth. But tell me about you. Well, I'll tell you what, we're already at the top of the hour. Let's talk about that when we come back, Nick. Plus, I want to take phone calls with you, perhaps your angelic stories. That's next on Coast to Coast AM.